Energy, the virtual energy. So just put in the chat, I'm good. Just I'm good. Nothing outside of I'm good. Just I'm good. Just drop in the chat because I gotta feel it. The Health Empowerment Group, we are back. This is our first midweek for this year. Oh, tonight's topic is gonna be off the wall. Yes, I'm good. I love saying that. My name is Maxwell Hill. Our speakers today will talk about heart health. You're probably thinking heart health. What is that? Have you heard of a broken heart syndrome? Listen, it is real. That's just one of the areas that's going to be covered, but a lot is going to happen today. Please, Q&A is going to be at the end. Keep those questions. At the end, we'll address them. And I got to say this. Have you been on the Garden State Church website? If not, you have to. The Health Empowerment, we have our own area, and you can watch different educational videos there. Listen. It's for free. You got to pay for these things sometimes. So it's free. Please take advantage, okay? I'm not going to hold us up. I'm going to introduce our speakers because this is so good. I don't want to take the time away from them. Let me start now. I will start off with Dr. Marcus Williams. Dr. Williams, I see that I'm good still coming, so I'm loving it. Let me hide the chat so I can focus. Dr. Marcus S. Williams believes your health is his number one priority. A board-certified invasive cardiologist, Dr. Williams recently joined Heart and Vascular Medical Group, HVA Medical Group. He offers a full range of services that address acute and chronic cardiac related illnesses. His goal is to empower the community to prevent and reduce heart disease, which is the number one cause of death in our community. That's deep, right? He will speak on health implications of unhealthy eating. I was trying to have something that wasn't unhealthy today. I'm like, ooh, let me grab my green apple. So I did good today. I'm so proud of me. I'm just sharing. And next up, Dr. Lori DeBonnet is a pediatrician who practiced 10 years in Chicago, the winning city of Chicago. I'm glad she's in New Jersey, though. The family relocated to New Jersey 16 years ago to allow her to pursue another passion. Clinical research, where she has had the role of clinical research physician, developing and conducting adult and pediatric clinical trials globally, including sub-Saharan Africa, another area for which she is passionate. She will speak about women's health heart. Next, Dr. Toju Chiki-Obi is a board-certified pediatrician and is the co-founder and medical director of HealthCore Limited. Using broadcast media, social media, and other internet platforms, HealthCore's goal is to improve health literacy in sub-Saharan Africa to promote health and wellness and prevent illness. The Health Zone Wellness Initiative, the NGO arm of HealthCore, builds community health capacity among vulnerable groups in Nigeria. Dr. Chiki-Obi will speak about pediatric heart health. Last but not the least, Carlito Kibelin is a certified crisis counselor and peer support specialist for a crisis text line. He's been doing this since 2019. He also volunteers as a disaster response crisis counselor for New Jersey Division of Mental Health Services. Carlito will touch on the impact of emotional and mental health on heart health. You see, we're bringing quality. Quality. So enough said, because I'm getting excited already. I will now pass it over to Dr. Williams to kick us off.
Thank you. Let me just pull up the slides here. Can everyone see the slides? Okay, great. All right. So a special thanks to Health Empowerment, to Dr. Gill, and the church leaders for allowing me to present on the heart. The American Heart Association has designated February as Heart Month. It is an opportunity for us to focus on your heart for 2024. Maxu mentioned about eating habits. Well, you know, I'm not really a nutritionist. I'm more of a heart doctor. So I might throw a little bit of food in here, but I thought we'd talk about heart disease and maybe we can integrate the two together here. So the question is, what is cardiovascular disease? Cardiovascular disease is heart or blood vessel disease, diseases that affect the circulatory system. When you think of examples, we think of something called coronary heart disease, which actually is what causes heart attacks. And I know in the church, there has been over the years, members and families who've had heart attacks because of obstruction in the arteries to the heart. And we also think about cerebral vascular, which is basically blood vessels in the brain that if they're clogged can cause stroke or are threatening to cause stroke with symptoms called TIAs. High blood pressure, congestive heart failure. This is where the heart pump gets fatigued, the muscle, and it doesn't work as effectively. And you can swell up with fluid or water. And congenital vascular, cardiovascular defects. These are actually things you will see in children particularly, but because of advances in our science and technology, many, fortunately, many young children and are getting to adulthood and even living into middle life. And so that is something that can affect it. And then peripheral vascular disease, those are clogged arteries in your legs or your limbs or whatever. So if we think about this, why do we talk about this? I think before we talk about ways to prevent and diet and all that, I want to you to understand the magnitude. So of all the different causes of death in the United States, you see that says 1995. And unfortunately, that still, this pattern still exists today. The good news is we have seen some improvement and reduction in the incidence, but still you're about 2.5 times more likely to have die from cardiovascular disease than any other event. Although as we have continued to progress, we do see that cancer is beginning to catch up with heart disease because heart disease has been falling. The tragedy is that with our youth today, because of patterns of obesity, we're concerned that this trend is starting to tick up again. It is projected by year 2030 that cardiovascular disease will be a global epidemic affecting all countries, even underdeveloped countries, as a leading cause of death. Just to give you some perspective, in Baghdad, during the Iraq War, when soldiers marched in Baghdad, 100 troops lost their lives. In that same period of time, over 250,000 of people died of cardiovascular disease in this country. And yet most of it is preventable and based on life choices and lifestyle. That's why we're having this conversation. It's about empowerment. The incredible thing about how God has created us is that much of what happens to us, we do have some control if we make choices that lead to healthier health. So with that template, I want to show this slide. And I have to apologize when I show it because most people see this and they kind of get a little like, wow, what is this? Well, this is actually an artery. This is an unfortunate patient who passed away, but they dissected this artery. And what I want you to notice is that there's the artery here, then there's this big glob of fat or cholesterol and fat here, and then there is a tear here, which is a cap that forms over this. So what's a little concerning is, I don't know if you're aware of this, but in most countries, particularly developed countries like ours, the majority, 90% of us, by the time we are teens and young adults, have fatty plaques in our arteries. And these things can continue to mature. They develop because fat deposits in these arteries, and then the body tries to attack this fat to get rid of it. And in the process of the inflammation that's created, the oxidation that's created, you get this buildup because it can't get rid of it over a lifetime, over 30 to 40 years for most of us. And there's a cap that forms over it, but this cap is fibrous, but when it ruptures, that's when you have an acute event, heart attack or stroke or vascular issue. And the question is how do we address that? Here's an example of a person that's having an acute unstable event. On the left, you see this artery doing a cardiac angiogram, and on the right is an ultrasound in the artery itself. But if you look on the left, you see this tight narrowing is occurring in an artery called the left anterior descending. I know that's a big word. I'm sorry to put that out there to you. But bottom line, it's a major artery. It's called the widowmaker because when it closes, more people die from this artery closing than any of the other two arteries provide circulation to the heart. If you notice a little bit above it, though, there's this grayish area here. That grayish area is clot. And that clot is formed because a plaque has ruptured, not in the tightest area, but in an area that's less tight. But because of the fat that's there and because of the destabilization of that plaque, it ruptured and the patient became unstable. With that, you get things like chest pain, a tightness, a shortness of breath. This is why it's so important when this occurs that you head to the hospital immediately. Because if you can get there within an hour or less, a time, they can actually open this artery up with blood thinners or with a stent and actually reduce the size of your heart attack, not only save your life, but protect your heart muscle and change the trajectory of your arrest going forward. And so this is part of why we're talking about this today. What can you do to lower cardiovascular disease? That's the big question today, right? So that's what we want to talk about. So first, let's talk about risk factors. Now, I realize we talk about the heart a lot. You see it in the news. I've spoken to you about it and other members in the church, other healthcare providers. You read about it. So maybe this is partly a review, but hopefully every time we review this, just like every time you review a scripture or you study something, you know, in your quiet time or if you're studying for a class, whatever, you'll see a different perspective, gain a deeper knowledge. So repetition is not bad. It's a way to solidify so that you can develop the right strategies. So one, you have what's called non-modifiable risk factors, right? So gender is one. Men tend to be more likely to develop atherosclerosis. Although I didn't show you on the slide, but if you had been paying attention, we had the men and women in that, and when you were looking at the incidence of cardiovascular death, more women die of cardiovascular disease than men in our country. And men just tend to have cardiovascular disease earlier because women are relatively protected till the age of 55, till menopause. And then the risk factors started to go up at that point. They accelerate. So by age 65, the risk for women is equal to that of men and may surpass it by the age of 70. Age is another factor, and family history. These are factors you cannot change. Modifiable factors. So one is high blood pressure, which is, we'll talk about in a minute what that is in terms of number. So you want to know your numbers. Obviously, smoking is a major cause of risk. Again, a modifiable factor. Being overweight can be a major contributor to risk. Diabetes is a big problem, basically an epidemic in our country, and something that can definitely contribute to risk. And then finally, lipids or cholesterol are a major issue. In fact, with lipids, there's something called the bad cholesterol, LDL. That's probably not a great term because you do need lipoprotein, low-density lipoprotein. That's what that stands for. But in excess, it can contribute to the acceleration of atherosclerosis. Along with it, there's things like lipoprotein little a, which I'll talk about briefly at the end, which is a genetic marker that increases the risk for heart attack and stroke. And there's some other factors we can talk about in the Q&A if people have questions about that. So in closing, I want to spend just a few minutes talking about what you can do. So one, there's American Heart Association and the Association of Black Cardiologists have come out with these different categories. Initially, American Heart had the Simple 7. The ABC had the Simple 8. It's modified a little as they've added, but let me see if we can go through this. And again, this may be something you've even seen before. Here's something that's not often talked about, and it's actually not on their list, but I've done research on this, and there's been a lot. I've talked about it in the literature. That people who pray, who meditate, who are part of fellowships and have great relationships do better, have better outcomes. This is generic. I know as a church, you have your own doctrine and theology, but there's something about the fact that people who are focused on trying to be spiritual or seeking God seem to have a better outcome on average than people who do not. So certainly that's a big part of it. So taking care of your spiritual health can help you with your physical health. They're linked together. Blood pressure. So the goal for blood pressure is to have your top number, the systolic, less than 130 and the bottom less than 80. Over the years, the blood pressure range has dropped in terms of normal. It used to be 140 over 90. Now it's 130 over 80. And in some high risk groups, which we can talk about later, the goal should be less than 120 and less than 80. So you should know your numbers and, if necessary, have that addressed. Controlling your cholesterol. So you want your total cholesterol less than 200. So if you get an annual cholesterol, if you're really young, probably, and you don't have cholesterol issues, probably every 5 years is reasonable. But as you get older, once a year, you should really get your cholesterol checked. Your sugar, you should know. The more important number is not just the absolute sugar, but your hemoglobin A1C. You may have seen that in the labs. And this is something you should ask your doctor. What is my hemoglobin A1C? It should be less than 5.8. If it's higher than that, then it's an indication you're either at risk for developing diabetes or you do have diabetes, and that should be addressed. Again, that relates to dietary issues that are really important. One of the things we know in our country, they spend a lot of time over a generation talking about reducing fat. And so Americans went crazy. We dropped the fat level. We had skim milk, all this stuff. But what we did is we supplemented that with carbs. And now we have an issue with obesity and overweight and an epidemic of diabetes. So it's really both controlling carbs and fats that are really important. It's about balance. That's really there. Eating smart and exercising regularly. So high protein, high vegetable diets with low salt is the goal, where you minimize fat and sugar and carbs and emphasize protein and vegetables. You want to exercise a minimum of 30 minutes a day, which can be as simple as walking 30 minutes a day. That alone can have a profound effect in reducing risk. Managing your weight. This talks about a BMI as a measure of your weight as related to your height. You can Google that if you want to know what your BMI is. And if you know your height and your weight, you can get that calculated. Most doctors now will calculate that for you when you go in for your exam. Obviously, do not smoke. Healthy pattern of sleep. They recommend 7 to 9 hours of sleep per day. Good luck with that, huh? But 7 to 9 hours of sleep is what's really recommended. Lack of sleep is a major contributor to elevation in blood pressure, elevation of sugar, weight gain, all the things that lead to increased cardiovascular risk. And access healthcare to take your prescriptions. Just as when you commit you want to work hard to find a good fit as far as a physician, a healthcare provider. Once you find them, then you want to partner with them and really listen to them when they make advice that might help you with your health. Finally, I wanted to speak very briefly because this is Black History Month and I'm participating. I'm a PI in a trial, clinical trial, looking at lipoprotein little a. And I wanted to put this out here. I want you to be aware that I'm participating in the African American Heart Study. This is a simple study that involves a one-time visit to have blood drawn to looking for lipoprotein A. It is a type of cholesterol protein linked with increased risk for cardiovascular disease. Past studies suggest there's a higher incidence in African Americans. And so this is a national trial recruiting about 5,000 patients to look at this. So if you're interested, I have my contact information here, my email, my office. If you call, we can talk to you to see, either put you, register you on the list or see, I send you information so you can look at the brochure to see if that's something we'd like to participate in. So this is my contact information. We're particularly looking for friends or family or African-Americans who've had a heart attack, bypass surgery, a stent, or severe peripheral vascular disease. Particularly, these are patients we're primed to really want to bring in. Secondly, I want to encourage the whole church. It's not just about African Americans, because anyone can have an elevated lipo A, and it can be tested, and insurance companies actually will pay for it. It's often not tested for, but it is a genetic marker, and if you have it and it's elevated, it may lead to identifying whether you're at elevated risk. With that, I'm done. I thank you for your patience and for the opportunity to speak. I can certainly speak a little bit about the nuances as it relates to diet later in the question and answer. But again, thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Marcus. I hope everyone can hear me. So I am Lori Debonet, and I apologize, I don't have slides. My computer broke, so I couldn't upload slides. So I hope just my voice doesn't lull you to sleep, but I have a lot to talk about. My specific topic is women and heart disease. And I may repeat some of the things that Dr. Marcus said, but I think they're worth repeating. I don't think you can hear these messages too much. But I love how Marcus ended with a plug for research. And I'll tell you why. So, you know, besides practicing pediatric medicine, I've had the honor and privilege of conducting clinical trials for the past 20 years or so. And I say that because in doing clinical trials, one of the things that's driven home to me is certain diseases look different in different populations. Certain diseases may look different in women. They may manifest a little bit differently in women. They may manifest differently based on race and ethnicity. They may manifest differently based on where you live in the world, right? And you know, I do a lot of trials with certain compounds, looking at, you know, the impact of certain drugs on disease states, and people respond to treatment medications very differently. And so, I love that he talked about research, and you know, not that this is a forum to talk about research, but it is so important for there to be representation in clinical trials. And you know, when I was researching the points that I wanted to talk about on this topic, sorry. I'm on my phone, so I hope you guys can hear me. Thank you for whoever said to increase the volume. So hopefully you can hear me okay. But one of the statistics that I came across that I thought was really unfortunate, as we're talking about women and heart disease, only 38% of participants in cardiovascular clinical trials are women. You know, I think that's a really unfortunately low percentage, because as Marcus said, cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of women, right? Approximately 60 million or 44% of women in the US have cardiovascular disease. And I don't know about you, but for a long time, I thought that breast cancer was the leading cause of death in women. But as Marcus said, really cardiovascular disease has surpassed cancer. And it really can affect women at any age. There are certain, you know, risk factors, hormonal risk factors that I'll talk about a little bit. One of the statistics that I wanted to share that has changed over the years, back in 2021, the data said that about 1 in 5 women, that cardiovascular disease were responsible for deaths in 1 in every 5 females. The more recent number is 1 in 3. And so, again, unfortunately, it is the leading cause of death in women. Only about 50%, about 55% of women recognize that cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of women. Again, that's unfortunate, but I think with education, as we increase awareness, that number hopefully will change. And again, cardiovascular disease kills more women than all cancers combined. I don't want to repeat what Dr. Marcus talked about, the different types of heart disease, coronary artery disease, arrhythmias, congestive heart failure. Many of these, as he said, are modifiable. You know, coronary artery disease can be modifiable. Yes, you can have a family history, but many of the lifestyle changes make these diseases modifiable. Heart failure, which can be due to coronary artery disease, again, these can be modifiable. And to me, it's very unfortunate that, you know, diseases that can be preventable just by lifestyle changes, not easy, but by, you know, determined lifestyle changes, a lot of these diseases can be prevented. So some things that are very specific for women, again, hormonal changes, as Marcus already alluded to, really can change the risk of cardiovascular disease. After menopause, women are at a much greater risk of coronary artery disease, again, because of hormonal changes. Pregnancy is also a significant life event that can impact cardiovascular risk. I read a statistic that about 50% of pregnant women enter pregnancy with an unhealthy heart. And because of the increased demand on the heart, because of hormonal factors, really pregnancy can present a high risk factor. And certain pregnancy-related issues that happen during pregnancy, gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, high blood pressure. When those occur during pregnancy, even after the pregnancy, the woman is at higher risk for cardiovascular disease. So the symptoms of heart disease in women can also be a little bit different. So you've got your general symptoms, which, you know, everybody probably knows about, that can occur in women. Angina, which is dull or heavy, chest discomfort or ache, pain in the neck, jaw, or throat. This can happen in men or women. Pain in the upper abdomen or back. But some symptoms that are a little bit more common in women that are very nonspecific, but they can be a symptom of heart disease: nausea, vomiting, excessive persistent fatigue. These can all be signs and symptoms of heart disease. And, you know, I read some anecdotes that many women have mistaken cardiovascular symptoms for the flu, thinking they may have had influenza, or persistent heartburn. That can actually be a symptom of cardiovascular disease, persistent heartburn or indigestion, excessive burping. You know, these can be symptoms of cardiovascular disease. And I think that, you know, again, many of these symptoms are nonspecific, but if you feel like, you know, something's just not right, you know, some people unfortunately are like, no, that's this or that's that, that's nothing serious. And they don't seek help. They don't go to the emergency room. I'd much rather go to the emergency room and have someone tell me, nope, you know, your symptoms are not cardiac, than not go and have a devastating or fatal outcome, right? So pay attention to these symptoms. Don't blow them off, especially if they're persistent, because they may not fit the classic of what people think of the classic cardiac symptoms. But again, my point is that some of these classic symptoms may not occur in women. When we talk about race, unfortunately, you know, the cardiovascular disease is more prevalent in African Americans. When going back to pregnancy, again, we know that Black women have the highest maternal mortality rates. Some of that is due to cardiovascular disease. So again, high blood pressure, preeclampsia, gestational diabetes during pregnancy increase the risk of having cardiovascular disease post-pregnancy. So when do you seek help? And again, I'll reiterate the symptoms: chest pain, upper back and neck pain, persistent indigestion or heartburn, again, nausea, vomiting, extreme fatigue, shortness of breath, dizziness, persistent palpitations, swelling of feet, ankles, or legs. And, you know, I won't get into this, but, you know, I have spoken to people that have said to me, oh, by the way, you know, my feet are really swollen. And I'm like, you need to, you know, be evaluated right away. Perhaps it's not cardiac related, but it very well could be. So those are symptoms that you really should have a heightened level of awareness to seek care. Marcus already talked about risk factors. You know, one of the other risk factors is stress or depression. It's really difficult to manage stress, but I think we need to be very mindful about how we manage stress and things that Marcus said about prayer and fellowship, great for stress. Exercise is great for stress. And I know some people think that I'm the crazy Zumba lady, because that's what I talk about a lot. But I do this to manage stress. I do this to incorporate my 150 minutes per week of exercise, because that is my way of reducing my cardiovascular risk factors. I've got an awful family history, you know, so I have to take steps to decrease my risk factors. So again, I'll close with, you know, how do you reduce your risk? And again, I don't want to repeat what Marcus said, but please know your numbers, know your blood pressure, know your total cholesterol, especially your LDL, know your triglycerides, know your blood sugar, and as Marcus said, your hemoglobin A1C. And again, hopefully speaking to this audience, you know, I don't have to say quit smoking. Hopefully none of us are smoking. We talked about the physical activity, limit your alcohol intake, watch your weight. Again, a lot of this is preventable. And, you know, God talks about us taking care of our temple. So we have to be intentional in taking care of our temples. And so with that, I think I'm turning it over to Toju. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori. That was great. I love it when we talk about heart disease in women. Because, yeah, you're absolutely right. We have unique ways of presentation. And yeah, so anyway, it is good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to talk to you about child heart health today. I hope everybody can hear me. And again, as Lori had said, some of what I say may be repetitive, but you know, this is a condition that bears repetition. And so I will not apologize for repeating where I repeat. So a number of heart conditions can affect children, and some of them are structural conditions that they're born with, what we call congenital heart diseases. And others are known as arrhythmias, which deal with the electrical conduction system of the heart that controls the heartbeat. And so arrhythmias cause your heart to either beat too fast, too slow, or irregularly. So in general, though, these two conditions, the congenital heart disease and the arrhythmias, are, you know, they're not, they affect a very small percentage of children, about 1% or less of all children. So tonight, though, I'll be focusing on the more common concerns regarding heart health in children. So prevention of heart disease starts in childhood. Parents may feel like, gosh, I have enough things to worry about. I don't want to be worrying about heart disease of my kids. But sadly, the truth is prevention of heart disease does start in childhood. Marcus talked about this, and Lori talked about it. Obesity, unhealthy diet, lack of physical exercise, buildup of plaque or fat deposits in the arteries, unhealthy changes in cholesterol levels, high blood pressure, diabetes, and exposure to cigarette smoke are all things that can start in childhood and are absolutely preventable. I mean, Marcus showed that remarkable slide, you know, of the cross section of the artery with the plaque and, you know, the shearing off of that plaque. The truth is, however old that person is, that plaque didn't just appear one day. It started at some point. And sadly, all of these things, all of these risk factors tend to start in childhood. In fact, this is a 2022 study. 39% of youth between the ages of 12 and 19 are overweight or obese. 53%, that's a half, have abnormal lipids or cholesterol levels. Almost a fifth of these age group have already pre-diabetic, and 15% have elevated blood pressure. So think about this for a minute. If a 12-year-old can have some of these things happening, and we know that these things are risk factors that are closely associated with premature heart attack and stroke. You may think that heart disease is a problem for adults and not for your children, but I'd like you to rethink this and to remind you that this is something you want to pay attention to now while your kids are young. Diet and exercise habits started in childhood can do one of two things. They can either start a lifetime of heart health or a lifetime of heart damage. This scripture, Proverbs 22:6, says, "Start children off the way they should go, and even when they're old, they will not turn from it." We often use this scripture with regards to our children's spiritual upbringing, but wisdom begs us to apply it also to our children's health. Take charge of your child's health by developing habits now that will reap tremendous benefits later on in their lives. And you know what? The most effective way to do this is to make healthy living a priority for the entire family. I love this graphic. It's children's hands with a parent's hands on either side and the family unit in the middle and the little heart on top, okay? If a child sees that eating well and getting plenty of exercise is a priority for mom and dad and other family members, he or she is more likely to adopt a similar lifestyle as he or she gets older and even when they leave home. It's not fair to tell your kids to eat their veggies and punish them or what have you over veggies when you're quaffing down French fries. Similarly, if your child sees you being sedentary and watching TV and on your phone or on the iPad all the time, he or she is likely to be sedentary as well. There are two parts to raising a heart-healthy child, a child that's going to grow up to be an adult with a healthy heart. The first part is healthy foods make for healthy hearts. I'll say it again. Healthy foods make for healthy hearts. Our kids are our responsibility, and they're not responsible for what they eat at their young ages. A balanced diet is important to children and teenagers, not just to prevent heart disease, but also to encourage just healthy growth and development. I'm going to give you some guidelines for a heart-healthy childhood diet, going from infancy, from when they're first born, all the way to when they're young adults. Breastfeed infants as long as possible. Aim to nurse for a full year, even as you're introducing solid foods. Once they're past infancy, this is the regimen across the board. Feed your children mostly fruits and vegetables, fresh fruits and vegetables if possible, frozen if not, canned as the third. Use a lot of whole grains, lean protein, and low-fat dairy. And I love the way when Marcus alluded to how we went through this crazy phase of everything had to be low-fat, but then we made up the difference in taste in sugars, okay? You have to focus on both with your kids. Don't let your kids drink fruit juice. That stuff is sugar, and I don't care what they put on the label about 100% natural or what have you, it's mostly sugars. If you want them to get healthy stuff, all the micronutrients and fantastic vitamins and good stuff that's in fruit, give them fresh fruit, not fruit juice, okay? For kids, lastly, watch portion sizes, all right? Don't insist your kid eat everything on their plate. Children are intuitive with their bodies that way. They eat what they want and then they walk away. But as parents, we think they're too scrawny, they're too this, you must finish everything on your plate. Don't do that to your kids. It creates an unhealthy relationship with food that can really go into adulthood. And the second part of raising a heart healthy child is healthy lifestyle means a healthy heart. I love this graphic. It has the heart symbol in the middle with all the good stuff, the fresh fruit and everything. You know, it has vegetables on the side, and then it has all your little exercise implements around, you know, your sneakers, your dumbbells, you know, your jump rope. Your child should get about 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity most days of the week. And you can split that. It doesn't all have to be in one stretch. It could be broken down into two or three times, okay? And I know that living conditions and adult parental schedules can make this really tough, but you'll only make it happen if you're all in, if you consider it a priority. In bad weather, and even if you live in a neighborhood where you feel it's unsafe, you know, a $2 jump rope, a $20 hopscotch mat that you can put indoors, or most kids have video games, dance video games are great ways to be physically active indoors. But most importantly, for physical activity, make it a family affair and exercise together, especially on the weekends. You know, I understand about the weekdays, but on the weekends, do something with your kids. Even if it means driving to a park some distance away and having all that open space for them to run around and do fun stuff, do it. I remember as a kid in Nigeria, on the weekends, my dad would take us to the beach And they would have all these sand dunes on the beach, and we'd pretend we were on the moon. We would race. We would, you know, my dad would take us to the local swimming pool. And, you know, some of you know, I spent a lot of time with my daughter in Hong Kong. By Thursday, Friday, her and her husband are talking up the weekend, how everybody's going to go hiking. And the 8-year-old drops her head and she moans and she groans. But you know what? Once the day rolls around and we're all out there doing this, it's fun, okay? Many kids today trade being active for sitting in front of screens, TVs, computers, iPads, phones. It doesn't matter what age group. Keep screen time to less than 2 hours per day. For preschoolers, that must be less than an hour per day. And for kids under 2 years old, absolutely zero screens. Parents, I know they make for great babysitting, but you are doing your child's cognitive development a disservice if you let them have screens before the age of two and through their preschool years. And lastly, I know Lori and Marcus alluded to this. Don't expose your kids to cigarette smoke. Remember that you're the most important role model for your kids. Your children and teens will learn their best heart-healthy choices by watching you. And although it is true that heart disease can run in families, a healthy diet can help mitigate and reduce heart disease risk across the board. If heart disease does run in your family, have a discussion with your child's healthcare provider and discuss whether your child needs to have their cholesterol levels and blood pressure and their weight measured, you know, monitored regularly. And I'm going to end with some additional tips for raising a heart-healthy child. If your child's an athlete, by all means, please have him visit the pediatrician for a physical evaluation to rule out the risk of sudden cardiac death. While it's rare in healthy teenagers, it must be addressed to identify those who are at risk. Secondly, go to the grocery store together and have fun. Learn understanding what labels, health food labels mean, and make it fun for your kids, you know. Have fun shopping so that the staples in your household are whole grains, low-fat dairy, lean proteins such as poultry and fish, and nuts, okay, and lots and lots of fresh fruit and vegetables. And then keep healthy options at hand. I don't know about you, but for me, when I am starving, I grab the first thing that's at hand. And you know what? If it's junk, then it's junk that's going in. Make sure that you have healthy snack options available when your children get home from school. Whole grain crackers, string cheese, hummus dip, veggies, Greek yogurt with apple slices, nuts and dried fruit combos, okay? Have these healthy things available. And then make dinner a healthy affair so that people aren't just snatching at stuff. Involve your child in planning some of the meals, you know, that you're making at night. And lastly, please check the salt intake. And the best way to do this is to avoid processed foods and keep the salt shaker away from the dining table. I will leave you with this slide. Although getting your child to eat healthy and be physically active can be a constant battle, it's one well worth fighting. A healthy child becomes a healthy adult, and only with your support and your guidance can your child be both. Thank you for listening to me and for giving me this time tonight. Good night.
I'll be next, and I'll be able to share my screen. Hi, everyone. Wonderful to end the Health Empowerment Group. Let me start sharing my screen. You had three doctors talking about health and heart. Now you got a crisis counselor. What a great way to end off a topic on heart and health. Now, I've got good news for you. I'm going to share some good stuff because, you know, sitting in the shoes of a crisis counselor, when we hear, you know, the volume of calls we take and people we listen to, one of the biggest things that people come in on a hotline is because they're dealing with fear, all right, and emotion, and they're dealing with stress, and they're dealing with panic, you name it, right? Well, when Dr. Marcus suggested to me, say, you should check out, broken heart syndrome, Carlito. So I looked at it, and, you know, it's interesting. It's not what you think it is. It's not, you know, we've all, as a footnote, have had broken hearts in relationships, right? That's going to happen. But I'll just read it to you. Broken heart syndrome is a short-term condition where some of your heart muscle weakens rapidly. Weak heart muscle can disrupt your heart supply of blood and its ability to pump. I don't know about you, but that sounds like a lot of stress to me. All right. And me personally, I do have experience with not only my wife, but also my dad going through some heart conditions, and it is challenging. I just want to break out really quick to what kinds of emotional and physical stress can cause broken heart. Because really, after reading this, listening to all three doctors and doing some of my own sort of mental health maintenance, I connect heart and mind direct. They're like not even a dotted line. And I think the Bible, what I'll show you, relates to that. All of this right here, what kinds of emotional, physical stress, let's be honest. I believe it's John chapter 10:10. You know, Jesus came to give us life to the full, right? Well, life to the full doesn't mean just all good news. It means a lot of life of this. We have life that's going to be really intense, right? Here's the good news. Ephesians 6 talks about, I love the metaphor of Paul, where he talks about, you know, the army and the soldier, and that you wear the breastplate of righteousness, right? Where do you wear it? To protect your heart. You wear this helmet of what? Salvation. You know, I always thought of like, why was he inspired to write the helmet of salvation, not the helmet of peace, the helmet of calmness, the helmet of like mindfulness? Because I really feel like you are saved the more that you feed your heart with good things, right? It's a direct line. That's why we wake up and we want to pray first, and we want to read our Bible first, right? We want garbage in to be first the good garbage, right? We want the good Bible to be going. I'm just using the garbage in, garbage out as the technical term for all the technology people, right? But it's true what Jesus said, what comes out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. That's just kind of a status check, right? But think about this. 1 Corinthians talks about context of people you're around. Like the more righteous you are, I think you're going to attract more righteous people. The opposite is the more unrighteous you are, I think you're going to attract a lot of unrighteous things and people. So be careful of that, because that comes with a lot of stress and a lot of intensity, right? People who are just after bad things, right? And then the last thing I'll say is, because we want to end this early, because really May Mental Health Month is coming up. So we're going to talk a lot about mental health there. So my piece can be very short. But I truly believe Romans 12 is kind of a code language that if you can crack this sort of some sort of like coding that's going on in the Bible, it just talks about just mental health, how it can really feed your heart, really good things. You could find it there. There's certain algorithms, right, that all the tech people want to find. Well, Romans 12 is a great chapter on just mental health itself. It talks about do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Because remember, mental health is metanoia, mind change. And then lastly, there's only really three things I think we can control in life, right? We can't control our conditions, our context around us, the job, the people who affect us. But what you can control is your attitude, your effort, and prayer life. So the last thing I want to put up is I love what Dr. Marcus put in terms of that shot of just, you know, the picture of just everything that we can do to do our best at having a better heart. Quite frankly, for me, it's hard to really do a lot of these things because of my emotion of laziness gets in the way. And my emotion of all other things like fear, uncertainty, get in the way of me trying to accomplish maintenance of my own heart. So I'm going to stop there because we're at end of our time. And I'm going to leave it to Russ to come in and close us out.
All right.